Well, I'm very honoured to have my next guest on the show. He was the 26th Prime Minister of Australia. He's currently the President of the Asia Society Policy Institute, among a whole range of other things. Kevin Rudd, welcome to the King Review.
Good to be with you, and good to talk to all your listeners across far north Queensland.
Why, of all the issues facing Australia, and I know that you are involved in a whole range of other matters, but of all of the issues facing Australia and indeed the globe, why so passionate about this Murdoch media monopoly?
There are two real reasons why I've decided to take the Murdoch beast on. One is that monopoly anywhere is just bad, whether it's in politics, media or business, because it concentrates power. And that's bad for any democracy or, frankly, any marketplace. The second reason is here in Australia, where we have massive long-term fundamental challenges which will determine our national future, which, frankly, don't see the light of day in our national conversation because it doesn't suit the ideological interests of the Murdoch media monopoly. Big questions like the diversification of our economy long-term. Big questions like the future of social equity in Australia so that everyone has a stake in the country's future and we don't end up with a country of haves and have-nots and therefore a divided polity. Questions like how do we adapt to the renewable energy revolution rather than pretend it's not going to happen? And also how do we navigate the shoals of the rise of China and where America will be in 20 or 30 or 50 years' time? These big debates get crowded out of our national conversation because they're not part of Murdoch's agenda. And so therefore, the second reason for taking on this debate is I have become very anxious about our country's future, and anxious about the absence of a sustained national conversation about these four or five mega challenges, which will determine whether our country in the future is prosperous and secure and diverse, or whether it's not. And that, as a father and a grandfather, worries the hell out of me.
What can, I guess, as community members, and I'm an old crusty journo who worked for Murdoch for over 10 years after having quite a significant fallout, but we won't go into that now. But what can I, as a citizen, what can the listeners do as average citizens? I know that there's a lot of concern about the newspaper closures here in North Queensland. In fact, right across Australia, over 100 papers, print papers, were closed. What can the average Joe and Jill do who are listening today to, if they want to get behind this this campaign that you've been launching, whether it's call for a royal commission or just on a day-to-day basis? Have you got any sort of practical advice? What can we do as average citizens to beat down this monopoly?
You're right to say that right across regional Australia, there is a level of despair at the moment about the closure of local newspapers. Murdoch, under COVID last year, closed down 116 regional titles right across Australia. And so in Queensland alone, you'll have a paper-thin Cairns Post kicking along, owned by Murdoch, Townsville Bulletin, still a paper edition, Gold Coast Bulletin, still a paper edition, Courier Mail in Brisbane, a paper edition. But everything else has either been put online or closed down. So when I think of my own time in Queensland politics working with Wayne Goss, I was his chief of staff way back when, if you went to Innisfail, you went in as a matter of respect to see the editor of the Innisfail Advocate. When you're in Mackay, you'd go and speak to the editorial team at the Mackay Mercury. The first place that you'd go to in Cairns is the Cairns Post to get a sense of what the hell was happening.
Well, they had their finger on the pulse, didn't they? I mean, editors and newsrooms and the old sub-editors, yeah, they really had the finger on the pulse, and that seems to be completely lost in recent years.
That's true, and that's what deeply concerns me as well, because I'm a kid who grew up in a country town in southeastern Queensland. Our local paper was the Nambour Chronicle, which my mother used to write the gossip column for the Mundi for way back in the Mesolithic period. It evolved. Then the Sunshine Coast Daily came along as the regional newspaper for where I grew up and where I'm now living. But it's now been folded by Murdoch as well. So here we have a community of hundreds of thousands of people in the Sunshine Coast without effectively a regional paper. Your question was, what can people do about it? Two things. Your voice matters. When I took up a petition last year online for the Australian Parliament demanding a royal commission into the abuse of Murdoch's media monopoly powers, everyone poo-pooed the idea. But within 28 days, we collected more than 500,000 signatures across Australia.
Extraordinary number. People, extraordinary number.
People are angry. It's the largest online petition in the country's history.
Mm.
And so, secondly, that has given rise to now a Senate inquiry into the future of media diversity. I spoke to that Senate inquiry probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Malcolm Turnbull from the other side of politics will be speaking to them next week, next month, I understand. So this is not so much a partisan issue. It is about how do we shape a diverse media for Australia's future. So your voice as members of the community, getting onto your local senators, putting in your own views to the Senate inquiry, which you can access by simply going to the Senate's website, that's important. There's a third thing as well. Murdoch's cash cow in Australia is realestate.com.au.
Mm.
His print operations don't earn him much money, but they're cross-subsidised by this hugely profitable online site for the buying and selling and leasing of property. If you're concerned about Murdoch's monopoly, and in particular the way he abuses it on questions such as climate change, then it's very easy for consumers to vote with their feet. Given that he's had the audacity to walk away from local communities right across Queensland and give them the forks on the question of the future of their local papers, then you could give him the forks when it comes to using realestate.com.au.
More easier said than done, given the dominance of realestate.com.au, I must say, but that's true. People can vote with their feet. From a personal point of view, operating at the highest level in the land as the Prime Minister, what were some of the personal impacts for you where you were almost sort of ushered in? You were certainly backed by Murdoch at one point, and then the tide turned against you. What was that experience like?
Well, just on the factuals of all of that, one quick point. Murdoch historically towards, let's call it the centre-left of Australian politics, has never liked us much. And so in the best seasons, in the 90s and the early part of the first decade of the century, we would probably get a 60-40 split against us in terms of the weighting of news stories, 60% conservative, maybe 40% Labor. In terms of their orientation. Now, we may not have liked that, but at least if you're from one side of politics, you could get your voice up.
Mm.
Secondly, in the events of 2007, in the lead up to that election, Murdoch and his tabloid newspapers did everything they could during that year to destroy me and my wife's reputation personally through one set of scandal stories after another. The idea that therefore by the end of the year, when they produced editorials saying we think you should vote for Rudd, means that they therefore backed me, actually belies what actually went on in the cut and thrust of politics that year. But for the future, here is in the post-2010 world, the reality is that for 20 of the last 20 federal and state elections, Murdoch has now viciously campaigned for one side of politics against the other. He has 70% ownership of the print media in Australia, nearly 100% of it in Queensland. And the problem for all of us is that that creates an unlevel playing field. At a personal level, sure, it's always difficult to navigate if you're Prime Minister of Australia. What Murdoch does with people who he dislikes or who oppose his business or his ideological interests is that he engages in the politics of character assassination. If you worked in newspapers yourself in the past, you'll understand exactly what I mean, and you'll understand how it's done, how the photographs are used, how the headlines are used, how the news stories are skewed, how the opinions pages are slanted in a particular direction. And frankly, what stories are ignored about your political opponents? And that's what they specialise in. So waking up each morning for the next volume in the character assassination saga is always a tricky business in terms of your own, as it were, personal well-being as the country's leader.
The ABC has extensive footprint right across Australia, particularly in regional Australia, and it's an incredibly important service in a whole range of ways. Yes, playing the devil's advocate, I use that term loosely, playing the devil's advocate, does the ABC, the coverage of the ABC, balance out some of that prejudice, if you like, from the Murdoch press?
Well, remember, the ABC, first and foremost, has no print coverage. And if you go into any regional radio station around Australia, or a regional television station, or even the major networks in the capital cities, you walk in, the first thing you see are the print newspapers that day spread in front of you on a table. And they've already been gone through and marked up as to what stories will be followed. 70% of those papers are Murdoch's. In Queensland, 100% of them. So let's bear in mind that the ABC does not have, as it were, any print footprint per se. I know they've got an online presence, but so does Murdoch have a very big online presence as well. But under their charter, the ABC are required to be neutral. And their own independent fact-checking mechanisms, the operation of scrutiny programs like Media Watch. And frankly, personally, my own political life, I mean, I have lodged multiple complaints against the ABC for biased coverage, in my judgment, against things that I have said and done, and extracted multiple apologies from the ABC over the years. So the idea that the ABC, often depicted by the current Conservative government under Mr. Morrison, as some sort of bunch of creeping lefties lurking under the counterpane waiting to come out and get you in the middle of the night, I just think it's a nonsense. They're supposed to be independent. If they skew too far one way or the other, then they know they get their heads bitten off.
My final point, I guess, on this Murdoch monopoly, the business model for news. Now, you could, again, argue that, well, newspapers such as Murdoch has done has to be closed down because the business model just is not there. I mean, journalism is expensive. Putting out a newspaper, printed newspaper, certainly is expensive. Could you ever see a time where the government needs to play a greater role in subsidising or supporting the media industry? Because certainly the business model, having been in newspapers and run my own small media company here in Cairns, the business model is very, very tough.
You're right to say that it's tough, and I fully accept that. There are variations on the business model which may work. I've seen others, for example, as independent operators run a weekly newspaper, which is substantial and thick, and then during the week they update it, you know, daily in terms of its online content. But still, with that physical paper, say of a Saturday morning, people can sit down and go through what's happening in their community and have some sense of local, as it were, community identity. But you're right. I mean, the whole nature of the economics of newspapers has changed. It began changing when radio came along in the 1920s. It changed further when television came along in the 1950s and 60s, and it changed fundamentally with the digital revolution of the last 20 years. So what's the future? Look, the key thing is that we have sufficient resources for what you and I would call public interest journalism, stuff which is not going to just be in search of hits and clicks in terms of generating as many eyeballs as possible in order to use that as your appeal line to the advertisers to stick their advertising content on your particular website, which is currently how it's evolving, which means that, you know, what I describe as nonsense stories, because they're entertaining and they're light, and what the Sussexes did this week and what they might do next week, and is Megan really nice or is she not nice, all that stuff will dominate the coverage, as opposed to do we have an economic future for Australia? Do we really? When people stop buying coal altogether around the world, what's the future for Queensland, for example? If the Chinese decide to ban iron ore imports from Australia next year, what do we do? Now, these are the questions which are not being canvassed.
Big questions.
But public interest journalism, but for public interest journalism, here's an idea. Already the Morrison government has decided through legislation, regulation, to effectively impose a charge on the new digital platforms, that's Google and Facebook, and provide the opportunity for funding agreements to be reached between them and the mainstream, as it were, media content providers, including News Corporation. This has happened the last few weeks. My argument would be, I don't see why we should be solving a future monopoly problem on digital platforms by compounding an existing monopoly problem in traditional media, such as that which Murdoch has. Why not instead impose some sort of levy on the digital platforms, which then could go to fund public interest journalism at a local, state, and national level across the country, for it to be dispensed by an independent body which is answerable to a parliamentary commissioner whose oversight would lie, for example, with a couple of people from each side of politics.
Look, just quickly, I know that you have to run. I had Joel, the former colleague of yours, Joel Fitzgibbon, on the show last week on his sort of recent bandwagon about the future of the Labor Party, the direction of the Labor Party, claiming that it has swung too far to the left. It's catering too much to those inner city or capital city suburbs. Your quick thoughts on, I'm sure you've seen Joel's, you know, he's on the cover of the Weekend Australia magazine, etc. Just your quick thoughts on Joel's pleas for the party and the Labor Party in general. Has it gone too far to the left? And certainly since you were leader, where you seem to be, you know, you were elected really on a very sort of sensible centrist or, you know, centre-left platform. How do you see the Labor Party at the moment and where it's headed?
Thing just to say about Joel, he's a good friend of mine, is that if his thesis was true, then why do we continue to see the re-election of Labor governments in states like Queensland? Because in my view, it's all about constantly finding the middle ground between working people, small business, and carving out a future for everybody. I think for the Labor Party's future, as I've written recently in a book, small book that I've written, unusually for me, it's a small book.
I did read that a friend of yours said he couldn't believe that your new book, The Case for Courage, couldn't have been written by you because it's quite short.
That's true. In fact, I used that anecdote at the front of my address to the National
Press Club. That's right.
Because I thought it was quite funny. and they're right. This is a short book, I think 80, 90 pages, but it goes to the question of what we've been talking about today, Murdoch, four or five massive challenges for the nation which are going unaddressed. But also then it goes to the question of Labor Party's future role. And all I'd say is Labor Party, nationally and federally, state level, we've always got to be a party which represents, in my argument, the little guy. And that means whether you are from a working family or whether you've decided to, you know, take out a loan, use your savings and set up a small business, take the big risk. We should be in there batting and battling for you as well. We should also be the party which becomes the natural supporters of the new industries of the 21st century, those driven by the new technology innovations which are coming in information technology, biotechnology and artificial intelligence, because that'll determine the competitiveness of countries in the future. So our job is to look after the little guy, always be having a clear idea on the future and a clear vision for the future, because the future doesn't just take care of itself. We've got to make sure we plan for it properly. But also, finally, for the Labor Party, it's really important that we are a broad church. And I mean that literally, so that whether you are a person of faith or a person not of faith, Christian faith, Catholic, Protestant, Pentecostal, Calathumpian, atheist, agnostic, Hindu, Buddhist, or South supporter. The bottom line is that you can be equally at home there. I do worry about the Liberal Party being taken over in many parts of Australia and in Queensland by sort of right-wing, Christian fundamentalists. I don't think that's good. But we need to be a comfortable home for what I describe as mainstream people of faith as well.
Would you ever consider a comeback to politics?
I think my wife would put me up against a wall, take out a rusty bullet and then implant it somewhere. So.
I think I've heard that as well, having spent a very little time in Parliament. Kevin Rudd, look, I could talk to you about so many issues, China obviously being a big one, but maybe we'll have to save that for another time. Mr Rudd, thank you so much for being on The King Review.
Good to talk and look forward to being back in Cairns soon. Theresa and I are already planning our visit up there sometime during the winter.